Chapter 18, Reflections of Relationships. The people we know who are emotionally healthy enjoy generally positive relationships. Conversely, those who don't seem to get along with anyone likely have a host of emotional issues. Much unhappiness in life stems from failing or failed relationships, with our emotional health feasting on and fueling the quality of our relationships. William Glasser, noted psychiatrist and founder of Reality Therapy, writes, "From the perspective of 40 years of psychiatric practice, it has become apparent to me that all unhappy people have the same problem. They are unable to get along with the people they want to get along well with." Letting others into our emotional space and entering theirs requires a diminution of the I. When the wall of I am me and he is broken down, there is connection, a bond. To be a part of someone's life, we need to create space for that person. If one is too self-absorbed, there is no room for anyone else. Our capacity to give love and to receive love is strained, if not altogether severed. Those who are in emotional pain become more absorbed in themselves. This is similar to physical pain, whereby someone with a toothache, for instance, finds it difficult to focus on the needs of another. The typical characteristics of the egocentric mentality are arrogance and bravado. But even a submissive personality who is seemingly void of ego can also be self-centered and selfish. He is consumed by his own pain, filled with self-pity, and unable to feel anyone else's pain while drowning in his own. Such a person experiences no real connection to anyone outside of himself, despite his seemingly noble nature. He will not, cannot, burden himself unless he receives a larger payout in the form of acceptance or approval. His taking is disguised as giving. His fear is dressed up as love. He may also be motivated by the need to assuage feelings of guilt or inadequacy, yet still his aim is to reduce his own suffering, not someone else's. The more self-esteem we have, the more complete we are. Receiving, after all, is a natural and reciprocal consequence of giving. The cycle of giving and receiving is the perfect union. In fact, research has even shown that certain areas of the brain exhibit elevated levels of activity when a person gives. Giving literally excites the brain. When we only take, however, we are left feeling empty and are forced to take repeatedly in a futile attempt to feel complete. Constant taking only reinforces our dependency and continues to exhaust us and others. Every positive emotion stems from giving and flows outward from us to others, while every negative emotion revolves around taking. Do not confuse lust for love. When we lust after someone or something, we think in terms of what they or it can do for us. When we love, however, our thoughts are immersed in what we can give to someone else. Giving makes us feel good, so we do it happily. But when we lust, we want only to take. When someone we love is in pain, we feel pain. When someone whom we lust for is in pain, we think only in terms of what that loss or inconvenience means to us. Eliminating false positives. Having colored in more of the psychological picture, you will find it easier to detect low self-esteem in a person by the way he speaks and behaves. Still, the potential for miscues abound. For example, a person who gives to be liked can often, at first glance, be confused with one who is giving because it is the right thing to do or because they want to give. The same action will cause two distinct emotional imprints based on their intention. It is the difference between giving a donation and being mugged. In both cases, money is going from one person to another, but one instance is empowering while the other is weakening. Accordingly, one act enhances self-esteem while the other is emotionally draining. If you give out of fear or guilt, your self-esteem is not enriched. Indeed, it is only diminished. You aren't really giving. The other person is taking. You are being taken advantage of, with your consent. Suppose you notice that someone habitually acquiesces to the wishes of others. Is this because he genuinely wishes to be helpful, or because he's afraid to say no, or does not feel worthy of asserting his feelings? Solely observing his gracious behavior, we cannot distinguish between a person who is humble and enjoys high self-esteem, and one who allows himself to become a doormat. Likewise, we can't presume that someone who gives in to make peace has low self-esteem and needs to avoid confrontation, or that he recognizes what matters and moves his ego out of the way. At the same time, holding one's ground may signal obstinance and defiance, an indication of extreme arrogance. I'm never wrong, or it's always the other guy, which in turn stems from low self-esteem. Perhaps, however, not acquiescing suggests that someone is choosing to enforce proper boundaries and not allowing himself to be manipulated by a person who is trying to play on his emotions. How does the trait of humility, the seed of self-esteem, translate into observable signs, particularly when someone's behavior may be nearly indistinguishable from the opposite? The impression of relationships. The classic face-vase illusion demonstrates negative space. Focus on the white image and we see a vase. Focus on the black space and we see two profiles facing each other. Each space, positive and negative, defines the other. Self-esteem is keenly observed as a reflection of one's relationships and manifests in three main domains: one's history and patterns, interactions and exchanges, and borders and boundaries. History and patterns. Intelligence is the ability to learn from your mistakes, the saying goes. Wisdom is the ability to learn from the mistakes of others. Observe the quality of someone's relationships and how he speaks about people in his life, both past and present. Does he have several good friends who have been in his life for a number of years, or a few short-term or fleeting friendships? How does he talk about his family, his siblings, his parents? Does he take responsibility for any relationships that have soured, or do they all seem to evaporate into bitter disappointment and resentment? A word of caution. You must let the evidence speak for itself, rather than rely on the person's own description of his relationships. Certain individuals are best friends with the world and love everyone, and they wrongly assume that everyone loves them in return. Such people have grandiose and flawed perceptions of how they are viewed by others. In the professional arena, the single best question to ask a candidate is an open-ended question about his last job, boss, and coworkers. Tell me about things at XYZ Corp. Or, describe your working relationship with your coworkers. Then, take note of how he speaks about his previous job, paying close attention to phrases. For example, nobody there understood me. They never took my ideas seriously. My boss was out to get me. Or, I had a personality conflict with my supervisor. You want to look for someone who assumes a degree of responsibility for his personal success and interpersonal relationships. This doesn't mean that he's not entitled to have mixed feelings and a little ill will, but if someone doesn't have the emotional intelligence to recognize that he is coming across as resentful, hostile, or spiteful, that in itself is a red flag. To this end, beware of any bold, broad, or sweeping statements that speak to incessant frustration. For example, everyone there is out for themselves. You wouldn't believe the crazy things going on there. Or, nobody there liked working for our manager. His perception is cause for concern, and his lack of discretion drips with even greater concern. Interactions and exchanges. Someone who lacks self-esteem may indulge in things to satisfy his own desires, yet not treat others particularly well. Or, he may overly cater to others because he craves their approval and respect, but he does not take care of his own needs. Only a person who truly has self-respect will treat himself and others well. And when I say well, I don't mean he engages in short-term gratification. Rather, he invests in his long-term well-being and is kind and good to others. Not so they will like him, but because it is the right thing to do. Here, we are especially interested in how someone treats those he doesn't have to be nice to and doesn't need to impress, such as the waiter, receptionist, or doorman. You will also want to note how he treats those who will not likely turn away from him, no matter how foul his behavior, such as an employee or dependent family member. Be on alert for the two-faced person with an inconsistent personality. He might be nice to us, but not so polite to others. Of course, if he treats us poorly but others well, we already know we've got a problem. Yet, the former is also a concern because it indicates that he's adjusting his conduct toward us for his own gain. His behavior toward us does not reflect his true self. A person who respects himself is capable of respecting others and thus conducts himself with integrity. Does he make commitments and stick to them, whether it is keeping an appointment or helping a friend in need? Or does something always seem to come up that interferes with him being able to follow through? Is he a person of his word, and can he be trusted? When he borrows something, does he return it in good shape and without delay, or do you constantly have to chase him down to repay a debt or an obligation? Is he careful about the truth, even when it comes at his own expense? Or does he tell lies that advance his personal agenda or take advantage of others? Borders and boundaries. A poor self-image often translates into porous borders because if a person does not have a clear definition of himself, he is unable to recognize what is proper between himself and another. This may manifest as a chronically needy person who asks to be rescued from every self-made crisis, or as a controlling personality who pushes his way into other people's space. Healthy boundaries are not created to keep people out, but rather to define our space and our sense of personal responsibility. Does this person have a clear sense of appropriate behavior, given the relationship? Does she make unreasonable requests of people she has just met or barely knows? Does she believe in reciprocating, or does she prefer to do the taking? We should ask ourselves if she respects or violates rules and the rights of others. For instance, we say, "I'm on a diet, please don't bring cake." But she brings it anyway, because she can't show up empty-handed. He says he can fix our computer, and even though we tell him not to, he takes it anyway because he wants to surprise us by fixing it. Minor infractions? Perhaps. But perhaps not. The presence or absence of a pattern answers this question. As we learned with our accident-prone cadet in Chapter 4, it is a red flag whenever an individual frequently interacts inconsistently with their status in a given dynamic. Depending on the nature of the relationship, the boundary violator turns on the psychological pressure and stokes our latent insecurities. The more you question yourself, the less you'll question him. This is one of his favorite tactics. People inherently need to perform in a manner consistent with how they see themselves and how they think others perceive them. The person who seeks to coerce others may apply this psychology by incorporating themes such as friendship, family, partnership, commitment to work, a sense of decency, all qualities that most people aspire to identify with. A question such as, isn't it amazing how some people don't know the definition of the word family or loyalty? Is so powerful. When it comes to some people, perhaps even ourselves, we may be particularly vulnerable because, A, we need to think of ourselves as good and noble and more susceptible to the opinions of others, and B, we have a greater need for internal consistency. To reduce uncertainty, we prefer to see others, the world, and most certainly ourselves, as predictable and stable. The manipulator's ace in the hole is to make you feel ashamed that you're not coming to their aid. They remind you of how bad you really are. They'll be convincing, too, because part of you believes they're right. The threat of disconnection creates fear, and they try yet again to circumvent your logical defenses. You become frantic to extinguish those glowing embers of shame, which is accomplished only by doing right by them. For the same reason that some people, perhaps you, cannot easily say no for fear of rejection, this person cannot hear no, because it is internalized as rejection, which reinforces their own deep-seated fear of unworthiness. Although an unrelenting pattern of these behaviors points to a personality disorder, we should remind ourselves yet again that at times, even the healthiest among us may resort to these tactics. The person may be in legitimate pain. Manipulation isn't always conscious. Yet, even when his manipulation is conscious, there may still be a good reason for you to say yes. Here's an example. Suppose your elderly aunt wants you to visit and talks about how she is getting up in years and who knows how long she'll be around. It's the kind of loving guilt trip that only family can lay on you. But just because you can see through your aunt's attempt at persuasion doesn't mean you should abandon your conscience or responsibilities. Other boundary violations include 1. Making improper remarks or asking embarrassing or highly personal questions of someone he barely knows without at least a casual, perfunctory preface or sincere regret afterward. 2. Being oblivious to social cues and violating others' personal space. This person is unable to read people's responses to his behavior. For example, if he is too loud and others show noticeable signs of discomfort, but he does not pick up on it, or if he stands too close while talking. 3. Being sexually seductive or overly flirtatious or familiar with someone he just met or barely knows. For example, calls a doctor he sees for the first time by his first name and pats him on the back, or hugs people who don't even know him. 4. Not hearing no, being really pushy, or forcing his opinion on others. For example, offers to do something and ignores the word no, even when it is said numerous times. Ignores someone's clear indication that they are uncomfortable with doing something. Ignores someone else's opinion and pushes his own opinion on them, or he shows no regard for others' wishes. And 5, neglecting social norms and universal boundaries. Does this person have respect for law and order, structure and civility, or does he disregard social norms and feel that laws and rules do not apply to him? Be sure to filter out false positives. Emotionally healthy people are able to solicit help when appropriate, rather than let a sense of pride or embarrassment, a function of the ego, stand in the way. A person who tells you not to call a doctor or an ambulance when he experiences chest pains because he doesn't want anyone to make a big fuss over him is not operating with optimum mental health. This is the kind of person who freely drops his pennies into the take a penny, leave a penny container, but finds it difficult to take a penny. He may say yes to the endless demands of others, but won't ask someone else for the smallest of favors. An individual with proper boundaries is willing and able to offer to help others when such help is reasonable. And at the same time, he can ask others for help in a responsible, direct, and non-manipulative manner. The healthier our relationships, the healthier we are, and the more we are able to move responsibly toward our life's purpose without the need for ego-oriented approval and without surrendering to the blinding fix of immediate gratification. Likewise, the happier we are with the direction and pace of our lives, the less frustrated we are with ourselves, and the more tolerant and patient we become with others. The more we give in to ourselves, the more we demand that the world accommodate us, which sets the stage for unhealthy interactions and relationships. But, as I have noted throughout the book, personality directs pathology. Not everyone makes their problem your problem. In the next chapter, we will learn how to fine-tune our read of those who may be suffering silently on the inside.